Welcome to the Portland Christian Center podcast. This week, Pastor Ray Noah shares a message from 1 Kings chapter 19 as he speaks on what God is saying to us as the church. This week's message is titled, A Time to Hear God. Now here's Pastor Ray.
Kind of like visitors, I guess. And, you know, we met some people. The first thing that we did when we got back into PCC was we came to church on Wednesday night, and we had this kind of a prayer convocation for the launch of Fall Ministries. And I met people that are brand new to PCC. I didn't know who they were, and they didn't know who we were. So if you've started attending Portland Christian Center in the last 2 months and you're wondering who in the Sam Hill are these guys sitting on the platform, it's true, we work here. So yeah, it is so good to see you. You know, somebody famous said, I think it was St. Augustine or C.S. Lewis or Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz, there's no place like home. Yeah, and that's true, isn't it? And for Linda and me, I think you would say this as well. There's no place like our home church. Believe me, there's no place like Portland Christian Center. And so we want to share a little bit about that today.
Well, we went 2 months, and here's the deal. 24/7 with this man. And we are still married. And I want you to know, you would be so proud of me, because he's such perfectionistic kind of guy that he has certain things he likes done a certain way, and it's kind of a joke within the Noah clan. And so today I jumped out of bed and I made that bed the first thing out, and he's got me trained, just things in order. It took 2 months and here we are.
Wow, I didn't know you felt that way. And you are crowding my side a little bit, and I don't like that. You know, next month or next week, we're going to jump back into the Gospel of John. We've been studying John all year long. It's been a real long journey for us. And the last couple of months while we were away, we took a break from that. But next week, we're going to get back into it and going to look at John chapter 15. And I want to talk throughout the month of September about abiding in Christ. That's one of the great chapters in the Bible. And it talks about remaining or living in or staying connected or abiding in Christ. And so we want to explore that as much as we can and talk about what that means about resting in Jesus and being connected to him so that we can become exceedingly fruit-bearing disciples and we can really begin to live. You see, the theme of our fall emphasis is really live or really living is the way God has designed us and destined us to live. And in so living as his fruit-bearing disciples, we will have an impact just by our lives. By the message of our lives, we will have an impact in this community. And so we want to begin to unpack that for you in the weeks to come. But today, we want to take kind of a personal journey with you, if you will permit us to do that, to share with you a little bit about what we experienced, what we heard from God on sabbatical. Because I think some of you are wondering, what in the world does a pastor do for 2 months? And, you know, did they hear from God? You know, were they just like vacationing and, you know, just relax. We're not going to show you vacation photos of us water skiing at Loon Lake or something like that. But we want to talk about what we sense God doing in our lives and saying to us about our lives and our ministry and about this church. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today. Before we do that, though, I want to thank some people for really making this possible for us. First of all, I'd like to thank the deacons of Portland Christian Center. There are 8 of them, and I want to thank them for forcing this sabbatical upon us. Because Linda and I are not the kind of people that would probably even think to do that ourselves. We love our lives, we love our work, we love our ministry, and this isn't work to us. It really is our fun, it's our vacation, it's our love. And so we just normally wouldn't take that much time off. I think at most we've spent a couple of weeks away from the church while we're in Africa or on vacation, but not that much time. But I think they wisely saw that it's important, especially after being in ministry for 35 years, that it's not a bad idea to disconnect from the normal routine of life and ministry so that we could reconnect with God and find some rest in him and hear from him so that we could come back refreshed and refocused for what he has for us in ministry. And to honor, really, the rhythm of renewal that even the Creator himself honored because on the seventh day, remember, on the seventh day of creation, he rested, and it's a holy thing. And so we don't do very well with that. And I think they were wise enough to say, you guys need to do that. And they insisted on us taking this time away. And we're really, really grateful. Deacon staff, we're really grateful for that. I also want to say thank you to our pastoral team, our spiritual leadership team here, ministry leadership team. They made this possible as well. Because when we go away, when I go away, whether it's on vacation or a couple of weeks at a time to do a couple of times a year to do the mission thing in Africa, there is no drop-off here. In fact, I think in terms of the preaching from this pulpit, it probably takes a step up or two. And so the preaching is strong. The leadership is excellent. Pastor Ron, our executive pastor, our senior leadership team, the pastors, the whole ministry team, this really is an incredible staff that we have here. We were able to get out and visit some other churches, and I'm, you know, and not to compare to other churches, but I'm just so grateful for what God has done here and the team that he's brought here as well. And so we don't come home to a boatload of issues. We just come home and are able to enter back into ministry and do what the Lord has called us to. So I'm so grateful for our pastoral team. And then lastly, I am grateful, I'm thankful for you, the congregation. You were faithful. You've been faithful to the Lord. You've advanced the mission that God has given this church. And as Pastor Ron was mentioning in the offering announcement and prayer time, you really have stepped up and you've given. You've given faithfully. You've gone beyond. You've been generous. And we're so grateful for that. You remember, right as we were leaving, the Sunday before we were leaving, I stood up here and I shared with you, I was a little bit nervous about going because I was worried about our church finances. Summertime tends to be the time when there's a drop-off. Every church, in this church included, there's a drop-off in giving. And it's also a time when the expenses are high in the church. And so I carried that little bit of anxiety with me. And I had challenged you before we left that you would stay faithful and even maybe give above what you normally would. And so I tried to detach from that as best I could. But our chief stewardship officer, Ron Stokes, emailed me about the finances of the church. Now, I had put an out-of-office notification on my computer. And when I got back, I couldn't even remember how to take it off. And so, you know, that muscle memory had just disappeared. So I had to have James, our tech guru, come and help me to find out how to take that out-of-office memo on my email off. And he was looking at it, and he said, you never turned it on in the first place. So that's why I was wondering, why are these people bugging me with all the emails? But one of those delightful emails came from Ron, and he said, hey, not to worry, the church is really responding well. And I want you to know that we not only made up the budget deficit that we had going into the summertime, but we've actually exceeded that. We're back to budget. We're a little beyond. And I'm so grateful to you. So grateful. So very grateful for your faithfulness and your generosity. And I just want to challenge you, don't take your foot off the throttle or the pedal on that. We have more to do as we head into the fall. So again, thank you for all of that. Well, for a pastor, sabbatical is for the purpose of spiritual renewal. You disconnect from the normal routine in order to reconnect more intimately with God and to hear from him. And so that was what our sabbatical was all about, and that was our hope and our expectation. And in some ways, probably for me, I don't know about for Linda, but there were some false expectations and some undue self-inflicted pressure to come back to you, like Moses coming down off the mountain of Sinai with this epiphany moment with the Ten Commandments and saying, here's the way, walk ye in it. Well, for us, it wasn't for me, it wasn't really a Moses on the mountaintop type experience. It was more like Elijah the prophet who had a mountaintop experience as well. And so I wanted to share a little bit about that just to kind of set up what we're going to talk about this morning. And if you have a Bible and you want to just look real quickly, it's 1 Kings chapter 18 and chapter 19. The story really starts before that, but it kind of comes to a head in chapter 18, where Elijah had gone up to a mountaintop. And there at the mountaintop, you remember the story in chapter 18? He confronted the prophets of Baal and Asherah. And there was a real showdown because the nation of Israel, God's people, had been drifting spiritually. I mean, evil was rampant in the land. And so Elijah challenged the nation by challenging these false prophets. So you remember the story, if you're familiar with the Bible at all. There was Elijah against 850 false prophets, and Elijah called down fire from heaven, and it literally came down, and it killed all of these false prophets. And Elijah thought, good, now we can experience revival in the land. Renewal is coming to Israel. But it didn't happen. His mountaintop experience really became quickly a valley experience for him. And so he left the mountain disappointed with God, disappointed that he didn't hear from God like he thought he should. He was just, I think, drained from the burdens of ministry, drained by carrying the burden of Israel wandering from God. He was frustrated with God for not doing what he thought God should have done, and he lost his perspective. And not only that, this man of God got depressed. He literally got depressed, and he even despaired of his life. He thought about taking his own life, and so God came along, saw what was going on, and God sent Elijah on a sabbatical, a 40-day journey, just like Moses had gone on a 40-day journey to Mount Sinai. God sent Elijah on a 40-day journey to the same mountain. He sent him back to Sinai. And I think Elijah probably thought, okay, now I'm going to hear from God. I'm going to go to the mountain of the Lord, and I'm going to come back with a clear direction and a message from God. I'm going to get the next version of the Ten Commandments so that I could set Israel straight. Interesting, along the way, God recognized what was going on in Elijah's life. He understood that he was depleted. He saw his depression. And he gave him some really practical things to help him out. He gave him some food. He said, you know what you need? You don't need therapy. You need a meal. And then he gave him some rest. He said, you know, you don't need to see a counselor. You just need to take a nap. And then he sent him on this journey, and he brought him to the mountain of the Lord. And along the way, several times, he just invited Elijah to pour out his heart. What is bugging you? What's on your heart? Elijah, talk to me about it. And so Elijah gets there to Mount Sinai, the place where Moses had received the commandments. And I'm sure that he thought this was going to be a Moses-like encounter, but it wasn't. And I want to pick up the story in chapter 19 and read a few verses. Chapter 19, verses 8 through 12. It says, Elijah got up. You can follow it on the screens. Elijah got up. He ate and he drank. And the food gave him enough strength to travel for 40 days and 40 nights to Mount Sinai, the mountain of God. There he came to a cave where he spent the night. And the Lord said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? Now, that's not like someone rings your doorbell and you're not expecting them. You go, what are you doing here? I mean, this is more of a, Elijah, tell me, what are you doing here? What's on your heart? Talk to me, pour out your concerns, and I will listen. Elijah said, verse 10, I have zealously served the Lord God Almighty, but the people of Israel have broken their covenant with you. They've torn down your altars, and they killed every one of your prophets. And I'm the only one left, and now they are trying to kill me too. The Lord told him, go out and stand before me on the mountain. And as Elijah stood there, the Lord passed by, and a mighty wind hit the mountain. It was such a terrible blast that the rocks were torn loose, but the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, there was a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, there was a sound of a gentle whisper. And it was there, as we go on in the rest of the chapter, that God spoke to Elijah. Not in the hurricane, not in the earthquake, not in the fire. You know, God isn't always that dramatic, is he? You know, it's not like Hollywood makes it out to be, where we get this epiphany moment. Sometimes it's just in the calm, ordinary, everyday stuff that God speaks. And that's what God did for Elijah, just in the ordinary moment, in a quiet, gentle whisper. He spoke to Elijah, and he did some things for them that we're not going to really focus on today, but I think they're very insightful for how God deals with people who are finding their rest in him, who really need God to speak into their lives. You know, number one, he refocused Elijah on a better future. You know, Elijah was focused on a failed past. And God said, Elijah, let go of that and look out in front of you. Look what I have for you. And he gave Elijah a very clear mission. He said, I want you to go and I want you to anoint a new king who's going to take care of this King Ahab problem that had inflicted so much evil and wickedness upon Israel. He said, I want you to focus on the future. Not only that, but he reinforced Elijah with a ministry helper. You know, Elijah was bearing this burden all by himself, and the Lord said, I want you to go and anoint this prophetic assistant by the name of Elisha, and he is going to help you to carry out the ministry, the prophetic call to the nation of Israel that I have assigned to you. And then lastly, very importantly, he reminded Elijah of a kingdom reality. He gave him a fresh perspective. He said, no, Elijah, you're not the only one who's still serving me. Matter of fact, Elijah, I've got thousands of people who haven't bowed their knee to Baal. There's more than what you think. I've got this in control. You know, Linda and I were hoping, I think Linda was as well, hoping for that Moses mountaintop-like experience. And I think instead God gave us more of an Elijah-like encounter with him. In that still, small, quiet, ordinary, everyday voice, he whispered to us. And I think that we've come back with a clearer focus and a fresh perspective of who God is, of who he's called us to be, and what he's called us to do. And so we want to share with you what we've learned, a little bit of what we've learned on our sabbatical. We're only going to have time to share a couple of things each, and then if it doesn't pour down rain, we're going to go have a hamburger, a very spiritual thing. But before we do that, we just kind of want to share from our heart what God gently whispered to us.
And we hope in the process of doing that the journey that we have been on really helps you for a journey that he's taking you through as well, because I think it will apply to many of us. Here is the truth. We were exhausted. That's the truth. Been a long time that we've taken a true vacation, and when we're away from here, we're doing Africa stuff, or we're in the middle of other things that were of serious of nature. And so, you know, we were exhausted, and there gets a point where you can feel your head not connecting with your words, and you're just so wiped out. And I know some of you are in that place even today, and so we hope that our journey will help you in a very big way. And then this church has been a part of planting 3,000 churches in the last decade, and yet when you're so exhausted, you sit there and go, does the church really work? Is this really worth giving your life to? And you see in the media and what's been said about the church and Christians and all this kind of stuff, and you're like, are we winning or are we losing? And if somewhere down in the process of this, if we lost our way and we've just got this big fairy tale we're believing in. Now that sounds really dramatic and critical, but if I'd be really honest, we were selling our life out to this and giving it 24/7, but it comes to does my faith work? Does this work? And so that was the condition that I found myself in particular on, and is this worth it? And so I just was in this journey, is does the church work and does the church really matter? And a scripture that we quote, we believe it, but just underneath the energy and whatnot to really believe that this thing we say Jesus in our life and the gospel really matters. And a verse that really, we say the church is the hope of the world, but to be honest, we've struggled. Do we see it here in the U.S. or is it what we see in Africa? In Africa, without question, a church comes into a village and it is transformed. But as we do our daily living and existing of life and we watch our faith walk, we're like, okay, people, the church, your faith is the hope of the world if you will just rest and lean into that. And as a passage that really has great meaning to us and just God just reconfirmed the confidence in that is Matthew 16:18. And Jesus spoke of his church and he said, I will build my church, and even the gates of hell will not prevail against it. Nothing will beat it. Do you know the church is the only organization in the world that God the Father says will not fail? Mm-hmm. There's not another organization that can be spoken of, but it is in the church. And that means that there will be nothing that will prevent the establishment of his church. There will be nothing that will destroy the church. Even Satan's best attempts to confuse and defeat and beat up his church. And it's not uncommon. We would talk to people here in our city and they would say, Christ, yes, the church, no. And we'd go, what's the disconnect? What's happening with that? Or they would profess a love of Jesus and yet they would want to follow him, but they wouldn't come to church. They wouldn't make the church as a regular part of their worship and their practice. And this low view of the church can happen because of a lot of different reasons, but one of our misunderstanding of what the Bible says the church is supposed to be about. And then just this misconception of the church, the error upon which the world looks at the church and tries to tell us who we are and what we are, which is so far from the truth of who we know we to be, and we get caught in that spin. So we visited multiple churches in Africa, in Washington, in Oregon, and we were just really curious about the condition of the church and what is happening out there. And each church was different. We were intentional about visiting a lot of different churches. Each church was doing was serving God and Christ in their way. They had a unique way of doing it. But we really saw these pastors sitting up here, and I hope you see that in us. Just in our staff, I'll add that, us and our staff, giving their lives to this and willing to do so with joy. And we found ourselves after these services wanting to go up and hug the pastors. We just wanted to hug them because
I didn't really want that.
Yeah. Well, you did more hugging than I did, to be very honest. And so struggling with really big issues that hit our faith over this last couple of months, big stuff. And we just wanted to go up and give them the hug. And as Ray and I went through this process and we got away from the work of the church and got refreshed back into the ministry of the church, we just found our own spirits begin to soar and really gain an understanding of what he had. So I'm going to give you just a couple things, and I'm going to go through it really quickly. And he's terrified that I could take, you know, the next hour, and I won't. But just God really did some really great things in both of us, and we are each going to share a part of that. First of all, for me, I just really began to do the study on who is the church? What is the church? What is the purpose of the church? Why are we here? Why do we meet together? Why is this important? Why should I give my time to this? And one of the passages that really stood out to me was found in Ephesians 1, 22 to 23, and really some other chapters in Ephesians, and I'll read this to you. It says, God has put all things under the authority of Christ and has made him head over all things for the benefit of the church. And man, despite his feeble attempts, the efforts that he does, we even give our best efforts. This church is God's church. Mm-hmm. He's the boss of the church. He is the head of the church, universal. And if, as a father cares and protects his family, God our Father is very invested in the condition and the spirit of the church. And he has a plan. He has a corporate plan. He has a purpose for the church universal even. And according to this scripture, he is doing everything. He's allowing things to happen, even in this world, for what? The benefit of the church. Not to make us weaker, but to make us stronger. Even some of those things that we didn't understand. And what we found is even that in the universal church, God is whispering some things that he's whispering to all the pastoral leadership. It's just getting shared a little bit different in some of these different churches. And the other thing is the church is his body. Ephesians 1:23, and the church is his body. It is made full and complete by Christ, who fill all things everywhere with himself. This is a metaphor, the church being a body, of how we're all related to one another. We're one body, we're committed to each other, we're commanded to care for, keep healthy, and to nurture each other. We did different things all through the series of this, our stay. We went 1 week into Sun River, which we had never vacationed in Sun River. And how many years have we been around like this? We'd never done it. And so we were out riding bikes, and there came a point where I took a tumble. Bike was a little tall for me, and I'm 5'1", and I went boom, 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 boom. And of course, you know, I was a little bit bloody, a little bit wounded, and, you know, my style, I picked myself up and go, I got this, you know. mountain woman here, and I just got back on the bike and we went for it. And as the progress of our vacation, we did some other things. We went to Ethiopia. We'd had some things that we were forced to do that, but we went in a friendship sort of way, so it was good. We went to Italy, and in the process of that, doing a lot of stair climbing and walking on a lot of irregular paths. Well, I came home, and I have a knee that is just inflamed and swollen like nobody's business. And I just thought, well, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. Didn't get better. So I went to the doctor and took some x-rays, and he sent me on to a physical therapist. And it was very interesting going into this physical therapy because he began to study my walk. And he began to study that and look at that and monitor different things. But he said, the first thing you must do with this knee is you need to nurture it. You need to love it. You need to care for it. You need to ice it 3 times a day. It is swollen. It is inflamed. It's hurting. I can't even work with you until you love this a little bit. And so I thought, wow, that's going to be hard. And then you need to protect it. And then once we get going, Linda, this is what's inflamed on you, and it's wounded and hurt. But you know what's also wrong? As I began to study your walk is off. And you need to work your stomach muscles, and you need to work your glutes, and you need to work on this muscle that's here, and you need to improve this muscles here. Your knee is your symptom. It's not your problem. And as I began to look at, as we receive people into our body, when they walk in the door, let's just give them a little loving kindness. Not expect them to all of a sudden step it up, get on that bike and go, muscle, get it going, get this right. A little loving kindness, because their lives are inflamed and they need a little bit of nurture along the way. And then once there's a little loving kindness, let's, work on the walk. Let's strengthen the muscles that I didn't even know those muscles needed cared for. Because I was so focused on the knee, my knee was a symptom, and the symptom is the brokenness. But how do we strengthen the areas of our body? How do we protect it? How do we nurture it? How do we care for it? How do we make it stronger, much as we need to do in an area of our life that's wounded? And then Ephesians 1:20, the church is his body, is made full and complete by God, who fills all things everywhere with himself. We do lack. We're imperfect. We're inhuman. We make mistakes. And yet our encouragement is that God is going to fill all of our empty and gaps that we have. And that's a great promise to me. I don't need to sweat it. God's got this thing. God has got, when we think of our faith and the church a whole and the attack upon this, God is filling the gaps of the things that we can't do for ourselves and the things that we don't know and then we don't understand. And then Ephesians 3, God has an eternal purpose. 3:10, it says, God's purposes in all this was to use the church to display his wisdom in its rich variety to all the unseen rulers and authorities. And I'm sitting there thinking, wait, God's, we're the wisdom? We are representative of holy wisdom, wise living and thinking to a world that is lost? We, you, me, the church? Yes. Is made the manifold wisdom of God is made through the church, and we're demonstration of that. And then God loved the church and gave himself for it. Ephesians 5:25. As we were disconnected, as I said, from the work of the church, the ministry of the church became even more real and important and reconfirming to me. Colossians 1:27. It says that you and me, we are the church. And we are described as the body of believers as Christ in you, the hope of glory. We are God's plan A and we are God's plan B. The church, the gospel, is the only thing in the world that can change a greedy heart to generous. The church is the only thing in the world that can change a selfish heart to a selfless and serving heart. The church, the gospel, Jesus, is the only thing that can heal your broken heart. And the thing that was so much joy for Ray and I as we read, we paused, we prayed, we visited other places, we talked with friends. This is what we thought we'd come back different. I don't know why we did, but different than this. This is the truth about Portland Christian Center. God is so pleased with our church. God is so pleased with you.
Yeah, I think that, not that I wasn't before, but I am more in love with this church than I've ever been. And just that was affirmed, confirmed time and time again as we just spent time with each other talking about this, spent time with God, and really saw what was going on out there in other churches. Not that we were critical or not that that was awful, our experience, as Linda said, but we just really realized that God was doing something very, very special at Portland Christian Center. You know, one of the things, I mean, we saw so much good in these other churches that we visited, and they were all significant churches, some in our community, some in the Northwest, as Linda talked about. Our size, if not even bigger, very visible in our community, and so we took so much away from those. But I think we also came away with some warning signs that we need to be careful of as a church ourselves. You see, what I've observed over the years, and because we don't get out very often from our church, I mean, this was an opportunity for us to for several weeks in a row to go see what's going on in some other places. And it was just confirmed to me that there is a drift in the church in the Western world. And that drift is both from the pulpit as well as the pew, from the pastor as well as the people in the congregation. And that is a drift that is seeing the church as an event that you go to experience and not a place where you come to encounter the living God. And so that was really a takeaway for me, and that is that God was saying, listen, remind the people that the church is not a place, it's a people. The church is not a place. It is, when we gather in a place. But the church is a people. It's God's people. And I want to challenge you. I think they're probably all different levels of worshipers here today. Our experiences with the church are different. But if you don't get that one right, you're going to have a fundamentally flawed view of and experience of the living body of Jesus Christ, the church. If you see it as an event and not an encounter, as a place and not a people, at some point, it's going to be a problem. It's going to be a challenge for you. And so I want to challenge you individually that you would make this commitment. You know, one of the things that's challenging or hard in a church of this size, or some of the churches that we went to that were even larger than this, when there's such a huge crowd in a place, it is really hard for you to come on a Sunday morning and really get plugged in to the flow of that church. I mean, it's difficult. We came and we went from churches, and honestly, it didn't really matter that we were there or not. And so as a staff, we talked about this. We need to do better at making pathways for people to get plugged into the life of this body. But I want to challenge you, especially those of you who are just kind of seeking and coming and maybe exploring this, that you would make a personal commitment, that you would pursue an experience and be connected to and committed to life within the body of Christ in this place. You got to go deeper. You got to get beyond just the Sunday morning experience. You need to get plugged into the life of the body. And it's easy in American Christianity not to do that, because the way churches are designed today and the way services are designed, you just go and you kind of watch things happen. And you don't really get connected to other people. And it's difficult. I understand it's difficult. But if you don't get beyond just the Sunday experience and get connected relationally with others in Christ's body, it's going to be a challenge for you. You're not going to have a full experience of what God intended this to be if you don't do that. That kind of leads to the second warning, and I saw this time and again in these churches that it was interesting being where you are in our experiences. I was sitting watching up here, and I would look around and I would notice almost in every single one of those places, the people... My judgment, I'm sorry, maybe I'm being judgmental, but it's just how I evaluated what I was experiencing. That people were experiencing worship voyeuristically. They were watching worship happen on the stage. And it didn't seem to be happening personally in their hearts. Now, again, I'm making a value judgment there, but that seemed to be my sense. People watching what was going on stage, and what was going on the stage was amazing. It was good. The music was good. The pastors were good. All the media stuff was really good. You know, and I think that's kind of typical of American churches today, but it's created this kind of a concert-going mentality where I go to watch what the performers are doing on stage. And I think that is a real drift, a dangerous drift in the American church today. And that leads me then to the last thing that I want to say about this, just talking about, you know, our impressions about the church. And that is that and we've talked about this quite a bit as a staff, but I'm more committed to this than ever before, that as our team plans our services and as we talk about who we are philosophically and what we're going to do, I really don't want Portland Christian Center to be about anything other than people coming to experience the manifest presence of God in the gathering times that we have. I want that more than anything else. I don't want people to come here because of the music on the stage or because the preaching is so cool or...
Thanks, Sarah.
Because that ain't going to happen, obviously. Or because I wear skinny jeans or, you know, or have a hipster beard. Sorry, David. Or because of our building. I mean, we went to some places. The buildings were amazing. The children's ministry wings, Phil, man, they looked like Disneyland, right? I don't want that to be why people come here. I'd love to have some of those things. They're not... There's nothing wrong with those, because we have a Starbucks cafe in the, you know, in the lobby, or as one church we experienced, we were handed a cup of Starbucks or a lemonade, our choice, when we walked into the sanctuary, and I know some of you would like that. You know, I don't want that to be what defines us. I know this sounds so holy to say this, but I want the presence of God to define us. I really do, because nothing else is worth it. Nothing else will last. You know, trends will come and go. The presence of the Lord is really what makes or breaks a church and what makes or breaks a service or what makes or breaks a ministry. So as best I know how to lead in this way, we're going to set the table. And I think we did a great job. I love the songs that were chosen today. Pastor Ron, what you had to say as well. I mean, we're, you know, inviting you to come forward for prayer takes time in a service. We didn't see any kind of prayer for the body of Christ, for the needs of the church in these churches. You know, it's like, man, where do people go to get ministry in this church? There weren't calls for commitment, and what do you do with this message, and how are you going to commit to this today? And again, I'm making some judgments, but I want this to be a place where, if nothing else, people walk in here and they go, I don't know what it is about that place. That pastor's weird, but I felt God. You know, people sit and they weep and they go, what is wrong with me? What is going on? And it's nothing more than God's Spirit is hovering over this place and we're experiencing Him. So I hope you'll pray with us that God will enable us to do that, that we will be that place where people come and they experience the presence of the living God. Amen? Yeah.
One of the things, this is a strange way to say it, but the churches, you know, give the message of the Lord and what they believe in the message in their way and how God has taught them to do it. And this is a strange way to say it, but I've taught leadership classes that an organization will only go to the level of its leader. And so that takes on for us a personal responsibility of how are we going to walk ahead? How are we going to allow God to really impact and be real and present in our own lives? Because we can't take you where we haven't gone ourselves. And so it was interesting to watch that. There was one service we went to in Washington afterwards. Ray was just like, I have so much anxiety. I am, you know. And then I took him to IKEA afterwards. The combination of the two. You
know? Oh, my Lord. I would rather go to Baghdad than IKEA. That's a horrible place. Seriously.
And so the combination of two, we were just like, you know, just wired up on that.
But it was not good.
Yeah, it wasn't good. but one of the things, so just this walking ahead. And so for us, it was just how can we reduce the things in our lives that maybe were really great, but they're not best. They're really great, but they're not best. And Solomon, known as one of the richest, wisest men in the Bible, if you've taken a look at Ecclesiastes, he writes this: everything is meaningless. He's gotten it all. Power, prestige, wisdom even. Everything is meaningless, completely meaningless. And so we go after all these things, and then once we get to what we think we've arrived, we've got there, and it's just not what we thought at all. And for me, and I think for us, is one of the benefits of stepping away was getting away from the noise and the immediate pressure that was in our life, whether it be people, opinions, and clutter. And one of the ways that I really had to, I came to the understanding, and even ashamed of my own life, is that I was busy moving stuff around, moving stuff of my life and stuff physically around more than I was moving forward. And so you can look busy, but all you're doing is moving things on the boat deck, and the boat's sinking. And so it's not going to bring life for you. And so I was just kind of amazed on how much I personally, and I hope you can see alignment in your own life, was been attracted to meaningless things. Oh, I thought they had meaning. I thought they were important, but when I had some space to evaluate that, I realized they weren't important at all. You know, last spring, our women's ministry had done an event, and Noelle McKee had talked about how to organize our lives and get rid of some of the clutter of your lives, and I'd made notes of what she had said, and so I was very aware of that, and I wanted to use this season of our time just to began to declutter and lay down the layers of our life. And we've been in a home. I have a husband, as you can see, is completely pressed from head to toe. Nothing's out of order ever. And I raised, and I'm opposite of that. I'm a little more chaotic. And I raised two delightful girls. And somebody came into my home once and said, you can tell girls live here. And I never understood what that meant until I had a grandson. Now I get it, what that means. And so there's stuff in our life that literally doesn't wear out. But it gets very, very dated in our lives. And so I would think, well, we still need this. We can't get away rid of this. We might use it someday, and we've got to make sure of this. And so following Noelle's rules, I just began a layering of just ridding our house and our life of some of this stuff. And so as we reorganize, we remove things, and I found in the process of that we even found refreshed things. And in the process, you know, just kind of take a look, what is it, God, that I've allowed in my life that I think is good stuff, processes, patterns, but it's really just clutter, and I'm just moving it around my place, moving it around my heart, moving it around my life. There's one point of just in the comical moment, and I kind of took things and pulled the layers out and got things that we hadn't used in several years that was in really good condition. We contacted friends. We're like, do you want this? You know, some of my friends, well, no, I don't want this. I started putting things on Craigslist, and in minutes, phone calls. And we opened up our garage, and people just began to pull things out of our garage. And for me, it was like I should have had a garage sale. That might have been a good stewardship. And if you've been called to a garage sale, that's God's plan for you. But for me, it was like, no, Linda, you are just to give this away. You're just to give this away. And you're supposed to have a spirit of generosity and you know, selflessness, and just give it away. And so we did. And there was stuff that didn't have a mark on it. And one of the piles, and we're still getting rid of some of the stacks that we've got organized, and what I took Ray with me. I said, hey, do you want to go? We need to go to this place. This is the kind of items that they take, and I knew. I didn't tell him. So I'd loaded up the back of our car, and he said, sure, I'll go with you. And so we're at the dock, and we're meeting this young man, and I'm laying it on the dock and putting all it, and Ray's looking at it and just like, there is some really good stuff here. And I'm like, yeah, I know, and that's why I wanted to bring it. I didn't want it to get broken. I wanted to, you know, all that kind of stuff. And there was one item that he picked up, and he's looking at it. And I go, Ray, if you want, we can put that back in the car. And he's looking at it, and he goes, oh, Linda, couldn't the church use this? Couldn't we put it somewhere? I'm like, no. So I had to pry it out his fingers, but we did leave it. And it's just this idea that what is in our lives that really is, it's good. It's good. But it's not God's best for us. And we fill ourselves up with this clutter that literally gets in the way of what God has for us. And so that was part of our sabbatical, is reducing the clutter.
I'm still upset that you gave my cowboy boots away.
No.
I'm praying about that one. Now, one more thing that we'll share, and then we'll have communion, and then we'll go to a picnic. But, you know, and this may seem a little random to you, but it was just something that really was, I think I was dealing with, and God was impressing upon me, and that is, and maybe it happened because I was in isolation from the staff and you, and I didn't have the daily, if not weekly, engagement with you about things that were going on in the world. But it just seemed in those 2 months that pardon my French, but it seemed like the world was going to hell in a handbasket awfully fast. I mean, stuff was happening, and I was like, whoa, and it was just kind of hitting me day after day or week by week. It was just really, really big, bad stuff in many cases that was going on. I mean, you know, since we've been gone, we've seen an increase of police officers being executed. It seems like there's just rampant lawlessness. Have you noticed that? Are anyone concerned about stuff like that besides me? And the videos came out of Planned Parenthood. I'm sorry, but I mean, I'm not sorry. That's barbarism. That's just awful, awful stuff. Russia, China, the world economy just on the precipice of, some experts saying, just falling apart. Iran, Syria, ISIS. Does it seem like end time prophecy is kind of ramping up, that we're getting closer and closer to the edge of the Lord going, okay, these guys are going to destroy themselves if I don't do something? Does it seem like that to you, that we are living at the end of time, that the dangers that exist to Israel? Ashley Madison. Some of you don't know what that is. Good. Some of you do. It's a website, apparently, where that encourages people, married people, to have affairs. Their tagline is, life is short, have an affair. And apparently somebody hacked this website, and come to find out there are 30 to 40 million subscribers to this, mostly in our nation. And now there's even a website, apparently, that you can go and you can check who was on, subscribe to Ashley Madison. And some of you have been on that, checking to see if I was on there, because they say spiritual leaders were subscribed to that, and you didn't find me, because I'm not. I wouldn't do that. But just the rampant immorality that this seems to be okay in our nation, politically. I mean, where we are politically in this kind of election cycle coming up. I mean, hasn't truth become stranger than fiction when the Donald and Hillary are our best choices? I'm probably making some of you mad right now. I usually don't say things, political things, but I mean, really? Is that the best we have to offer? On a personal ministry level, right before we left for sabbatical, our key guy in Africa that I have worked with for close to 20 years, he runs Ethiopia, Uganda, South Sudan, our initiatives into other countries, just a close friend, like a brother to me, right before we left said, oh, I've got some news you're not going to be happy about. Me and my family are immigrating to America. And we were ready to leave for sabbatical. We were, and on top of that, we were launching some brand new initiatives in this church planting ministry that God has given us in the Petros Network. We were going to plant 100. We are going to plant 100 churches, if not 1,000 churches, in Muslim East Ethiopia. We were launching the building of a women's empowerment center, a literal building that will help widows and poor women to learn, get skills, and be able to survive and thrive in life and take care of their families. So we were just ready to launch a Bible Institute for our church planters, knowing that they needed training beyond what we were giving them. And we get this announcement that he's leaving, and we're suddenly going, oh my goodness, what in the world are we going to do? And so it just seemed to me that all of these things were happening, and I was so out of control. And here's what the Lord whispered to me along the way. I am sovereign. I am sovereign. I'm in control of all of these things, so you don't have to be. And I've got them right where I want them, so just relax. I am sovereign. Still, small whisper, the Lord said, let me be God. I'll do a much better job at that than you. You know, as we've been in this journey through the Gospel of John, one of the things that I've done, some of you know about it, many of you don't, but I write a devotional blog, and so I've tried to write a blog post, just a devotional blog post for every chapter in John, and I've done that throughout the year, and I've written 3 blogs per chapter, so I've written 63 chapters, and it's online, and you can read it. And so on sabbatical, I decided to go back and to go through John again, because we're still not through with it, and I decided to write one more blog per chapter, so I'll end up with 4 blog posts for every chapter in John. And so I started doing that, and I'm, you know, more than halfway through, and those get published in advance, and so I write them, and then down the ways, a friend of mine, Bill Rasmussen, back there, proofs them, and he edits and then posts them according to the schedule. And it's interesting to me that the one that will be posted tomorrow, you all ought to go there. I ought to have 1,500 hits tomorrow. You can help me to be a popular blogger, so just go to the blog website. But the one that is posting tomorrow came from John chapter 6, and I want to read this, and we'll start closing this down with this. John chapter 6, verses 5 through 6, and this is what it says. It says, Jesus sat on the hillside with his disciples around him, and soon he saw a great multitude of people climbing the hill looking for him. Turning to Philip, one of his 12 disciples, he asked him, Philip, where can we buy bread to feed all of these people? Now, you know the rest of the story is the feeding of the multitude, the feeding of the 5,000. Before we get to that, though, he says to Philip, where can we go to get bread to feed all of these people? And then notice the parentheses. It says he was testing Philip. Don't you know that Jesus tests our faith sometimes? You know, he stretches our faith because our faith is greater than anything else that we have in this life. And so Jesus sometimes comes along and he just stretches it to where we think it's going to break, you know. But he does that in order to strengthen faith, because faith is not faith if it's not tempered. And then I love this last line, and this is what I want to focus on. He was testing Philip, notice this, for he already knew what he was going to do. Jesus already knew what he was going to do. I don't know who first said it, and I think it's a pretty good statement. Rules for living, really, rules for life, I think we could call it. For people who follow Christ especially, this is good advice. And it simply goes like this. It's 2 rules for living. Rule number 1, don't sweat the small stuff. And you know rule number 2? Say it with me. It's all small stuff. Don't sweat the small stuff. And it's all small stuff. And that's so true. You see, with God, nothing is too big. Nothing is too hard. Nothing is too big. Nothing's too hard. It's all small stuff to him. Remember what God said to Abraham and Sarah back in Genesis chapter 18? He told them, he came to them and he announced that they're going to have a son. They're childless and they're well into their 90s. Abraham's 100 years old at this point. And as God is talking to Abraham, Sarah's a few steps away. She's kind of hiding at the flap of the tent, listening in. And when God says that, she laughs. You know, and you probably would too. And so God knows all things. And he says to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh? Why did she say, can an old woman like me have a baby? Is anything too hard for the Lord? I will return about this time next year and Sarah will have a son. And it was true. She did. But he says, is anything too hard for the Lord? Is anything too hard for the Lord? No. Not even a 90-year-old barren woman having a child in her old age. Jeremiah chapter 32, verse 17. The prophet is reminding God during a time of absolute spiritual devastation in Israel. He says, oh, sovereign Lord, you made the heavens and the earth by your strong hand and your powerful arm. Nothing is too hard for you. He's kind of talking himself into that, but he's also reminding the Lord of who the Lord is. And later in that very same chapter, in verses 26 and 27, God himself sends word back to Jeremiah the prophet. He says, I'm the Lord, the God of all the peoples of the world. Is anything too hard for me? That's a rhetorical question, by the way. The answer is what? No, nothing is too hard for God. Why? Because it's all small stuff to God. Get the point? Nothing is above, nothing in this world and nothing in your life is above God's pay grade. He created it all and he created it for his glory and his purpose. And he will turn it all when it starts to turn upside down in your view. He will turn it all for his glory and your good. There's nothing, absolutely nothing that escapes his watchful eye in your life. So there's nothing too big. There's nothing too hard for him. It's all small stuff. And therefore, everything is possible for you as a child of God. There's nothing impossible for God. Everything is possible for you. And that's why Jesus said what he said to Philip, because he already knew what he was going to do. And God already knows what he's going to do in your life. Jesus already knows what he needs to do to bring you through and to bring glory to himself and to work out all things for your good. And since that's true, rule number one is don't sweat the small stuff. And by the way, rule number two is true today as it was back then. It's all small stuff to God. So, since that's true, why not just relax a little bit and enjoy the day? Even if your world seems, to be going to hell in a handbasket, God is still in control. And what you're facing is small stuff to him. So why don't you relax and go have a hamburger? Someone bigger than you is in charge.
Thanks again for listening to this week's edition of the Portland Christian Center podcast. If you want more information about the ministries of Portland Christian Center or have a prayer need, please visit us online at pcctoday.com. Thanks for listening.